Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Ken Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome, everybody, to another edition of Geek Cave Podcast Movies. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad, and we are brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today, with free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of Sega, Nintendo, RoboCop, Dragon Ball, or something in between, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. And if you're listening to this episode when we post it, order soon to make sure that your order arrives in time for the holidays. We're also brought to you by Gamefly, your destination for new and used video games. Now with new membership options for everyone, including elite plans, so you always get the newest game, and a budget plan to help you save some cash. Plus, their store carries Lego products and some of the most popular arcade 1-up cabinets. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want without worrying about late fees. When you're done, just send it back with the postage paid envelope for a new one or pay a lot less than in-store prices. Keep it forever. Sign up for a 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. We have a website? Huh.
A little bit.
All right. Check it out. Pilot Party?
Hit it!
Pilot Party! Pilot Party!
Pilot Party!
Welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode. Why only the first episode? Because Santa won't come till I'm asleep. So, what do you get when you...
Darren removes his glasses. So, I think that gives you advantage on your next roll.
Unless it's a perception check, then he gets disadvantage. So, what do you get when you mix the future, spaceships, and cowboys?
Outlaw Star.
Try again.
Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, hey, that's relevant.
Yes, I know. I am talking about the 2021 live-action Cowboy Bebop on Netflix. We start in the middle of a casino robbery. Most of the bystanders are dead, and the gang is trying to finish the job when the elevator dings. Out walks Spike Spiegel, wearing headphones and oblivious to the situation. This is a ploy, and soon the fight is on. Partway through the fight, Jet Black crashes through the ceiling and scolds Spike for killing so many of the robbers. They're worth more alive. He then kills one himself. One of the henchmen who was in the bathroom this whole time comes out with a disruptor and blows a hole through the wall. It's at this time we learn that the casino is a space station. In space! Things start to get sucked out the hole. Spike saves the leader of the gang while Jet activates the safety system. They turn the leader over to the police for a bounty, minus the damage to the casino, which is considerable. They need serious cash, so they go after another bounty. A guy by the name of Vazimov. He's heading to Tijuana to sell a stolen drug called Red Eye. After some searching, Spike tracks him to a bar. Outside, he approaches Asimov's wife, Katrina. As they talk, a gun is pointed at the back of his head. Meet Faye Valentine. She's after Katrina to return her to her father. Faye thinks Spike is after Katrina. Spike thinks Faye is after Asimov. Fighting ensues. Asimov and Katrina get away, and Spike subdues Faye, handcuffing her to the bathroom of Jet's ship, the Bebop. Jet and Spike figure out where Asimov is heading to an airfield so they can leave the planet. Spike and Jet ambush them, but then the Red Dragon crime syndicate ambushes them. The Red Dragons are who Asimov stole the drug from. Massive shootout happens. Spike takes out most of the dragons except one. He stopped because Asimov and Katrina are getting away. Just as they're about to take off, Faye shows up and shoots Asimov, fatally wounding him. Spike follows in his ship, and he tries to reason with Katrina to turn around, but she decides she would rather die than live without Asimov, so she flies into a police barricade and is killed. The remaining dragon member goes back to base, where he tells the head of the syndicate what happened. It's revealed that they know Spike, and that Spike is supposed to be dead. If you love the anime, you'll love this. It's very stylized in that fashion. The actors and the crew took great pains to capture the magic of the anime in live action. The casting is fantastic. John Cho as Spike is perfect, and it's clear he's come a long way from Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. Now for my predictions. I know how the anime ends. I've seen it a dozen times. But the live action remakes don't always stick to the story. But that's not going to be the case, is it, Christopher Yost, the person who developed this live-action show? No, because we don't change this story. It's awesome, and you're going to follow the plan, right? Anyway, if you haven't seen the anime, I highly recommend it, then go watch the live-action version. I give it 5 super intelligent Welsh corgis out of 5.
That's glorious, wonderful, amazing. Do you have any other reviews?
First 3 episodes of Hawkeye are out at the time of this taping. It's really freaking good. And Jeremy Renner actually learned sign language so he could converse with one of his co-stars, who is the leading antagonist. Also, Kingpin might show up. You just freaking watch Hawkeye. It's a blast.
Vincent D'Onofrio?
Maybe.
I'm a little bit more excited about it. Not enough to get Disney Plus, but more excited.
They've teased pretty heavily. Right now, the leading antagonist is a woman named Echo, who communicates entirely via sign language. Vincent D'Onofrio, a.k.a. Kingpin, has been heavily implied to be the looming big bad of this series.
Cool. Really easy to kill him with an arrow. What else did you watch, Justin?
I watched on, speaking of Disney Plus, the 3-part The Beatles Get Back documentary done by Peter Jackson.
What else is there to say?
A bit of backstory. In 1969, the Beatles went on an ambitious project where they were going to have a film crew record them creating and recording an album, and it was supposed to culminate with a live performance of the album, their first live performance in 3 years at that point. It didn't go that way because this is at the end of the Beatles' tenure together. Tensions were high. And the resulting project back in 69 was less than stellar. The documentary was cut in a way to show more of the drama and the tension between the group than anything else. But there were hundreds of hours of unused footage. So with the permission of Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, John's widow, Yoko, and George's widow, Olivia, Peter Jackson got a hold of all of that footage. They cleaned it up and they edited it together to make a 7.5-hour documentary. It's in 3 parts. Each part is about 2.5 hours. And it's on Disney Plus, and it covers a 22-day span in the life of the Beatles where they start coming up with song ideas, recording them, the rooftop concert, and all that stuff. And it's just, as a Beatle fan, or if you're a fan of music history, this is well worth the watch because it paints a more complete picture of that timeline. The good and the bad, everything in between. And there are some moments where you're just sitting there and you're watching them. Like, you see Paul create the song Get Back out of nowhere. He's sitting there with his bass, and he's just kind of plunking along. And if you know the song, you start hearing the early beginnings of it. And then by the end, they have a complete song. And it's just, to watch somebody make something so iconic from nothing is worth it alone. So if you have Disney Plus, I highly recommend it. I hope they will release it on physical media so that you can buy it for somebody who doesn't have Disney Plus. There you go. It's worth a watch.
Very cool. Very cool. So there are a lot of shows out there that live in the memories of TV land. Some of them are given new life. Some will lie half buried in the sandy depths of the ocean of forgotten entertainments. This segment of the show asked you about one such forgotten piece of television history and asks you, should we review it? It was good then. The original's just as good now. Reboot, the idea is sound, but let's modernize and capture some magic. Revive, what are these characters doing now after a couple decades of growth and development? Or refuse, Chad, I'ma plant my geeky foot in your geeky butt if you do this again. Mm. Gentlemen, I will transport you back to the far-flung days of the late 80s. September of 1989, precisely, the 17th. The 90s wouldn't show up, in the Midwest at least, for another like 5 years. You're getting ready to jump into a quiet evening of CBS sitcoms, because that's what we did back then, when the gentle opening of the theme is interrupted by a military-style march that would make John Philip Sousa proud. As the brass dies down, we are introduced to Major John D. McGillis.
Oh, God.
Of the Marine Corps. A straight-laced, no-nonsense individual. Also introduced to Pollyanna Esther Cooper, a reporter that has written an unflattering piece about the Corps. And when these two get together, sparks begin to fly until they get married and John D. McGillis becomes Major Dad?
I salute you, sir.
The comedy centered around the ordered discipline of Mac with the disordered reality of family life. Add the liberal-conservative divide, which was culturally still in its infancy, and so we found it funny. And you have a pretty reasonable family-friendly comedy that poked a bit of fun at the culture of the time while still being mostly respectful of it. And so my question to you, gentlemen, Major Dad, review, reboot, revive, or refuse?
I saw this on one of the streaming services last night. I was flipping through, and it came up, and I believe my verbatim quote was, I haven't thought about this show since the first episode I ever watched of it. It's, all right, so a little bit of a side geekery here. In the 90s, Vince McMahon's World Wrestling Federation had a problem with characters in that they all had jobs. You had a wrestling garbage man. You had a wrestling clown. You had a wrestling walking nuclear bomb, and so on and so forth. This reminds me of that era where every sitcom had someone with a wacky job, or in this case, like a job, but put in a wacky situation. And so Army Guy as a father. And they figured, let's just fucking go with it. No, I don't want to watch this again.
Point of order, Marine Guy. Army is different.
Okay. My bad.
Semper
he's a major.
Fi, mother.
But he is a... Okay. A Marine Guy. Thank you for your service. Don't make me watch this. I remember watching one episode as a kid and thinking that was dumb and never seeing it again. So I have no reason to think that I would feel any different almost 40 years later.
So just to be clear, you're going with reboot.
I'm going with Chad, drop and give me 50. I'm not watching this.
I would go with review for the nostalgic factor, but it does not need to be rebooted. It does not need to be revived. And I don't hate you for suggesting it.
So I did watch the first like 3 or 4 episodes, you know, just to remember, because it's kind of like Ninja Turtles. You know, the first 5 episodes are the opening movie.
Yeah.
And then it gets into episode by episode. Dude, this straight up refuse.
Yes.
Straight up. It was family friendly in the time. It still is. Clearly a product of its time. Also, painful. The actors are good. The comedy is fine. It is at times just straight up painful to watch. And so.
Now, to be fair, when I said review, I haven't seen this since the 90s.
Oh, yeah. I understand.
That's why I clarified for the nostalgic value.
And I guarantee that if you were to do a pilot party on Major Dad, your look into the future would be, it doesn't matter what I think's going to happen. This ain't going to last longer than another 4 episodes.
Well, I know back in the day I'd seen more than 1 episode, so I can't. It's automatically disqualified.
All right. So.
Bullet dodged.
I think this might be one of our first refuses. Yeah,
I think so.
All right. Now is the movie trailer roundup. I watched about half hour's worth of movie trailers this morning, and I put down just a very, very short response to each of them. So, Matrix 4, I got nothing. It looks very Matrixy though. Sing 2, I cannot express how much I dislike the koala character in this movie. That being said, I'll no doubt end up seeing it because kids. Spider-Man No Way Home, lots of villains. It works so well in every other Spider-Man movie that had lots of villains.
This is true.
Rumble, monster wrestling, I'm on board. DC League of Super Pets, looks funny and stupid. Dog, Turner and Hooch meets romantic comedy with a military background. Moonfall, Roland Emmerich's back to creating disaster movies, and I am here for it. Run and Gun? More like Fun and Gun. Ah? Wormwood Apocalypse? Hey, have you ever thought about seeing a zombie movie set in Australia? Here's your opportunity. Chicken Hair and the Hamster of Darkness. Child adventure comedy seems to be leaning into slapstick an awful lot, but no doubt is going to be an accept-yourself kind of movie. Nightmare Alley, gangster movie set in the 30s and 40s? Nope, that's a head fake. Some kind of psychological horror. Tragedy of Macbeth, the Scottish play looks Scottish gray. Lady of Heaven, a religious-adjacent epic centering on Muhammad. Shattered, horror movie of the worst kind. It is a movie that I will never have to fear Justin recommending for the You Want Me to Watch What's as body torture that's been chosen to show.
Yeah, not my thing.
Do you guys have anything else before we get to the random review and the Crystal Steamers?
Nope, I'm good.
Ooh.
Yeah,
ooh,
what's
ooh.
Up, Jen? What's up, Darren?
Actually...
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
Okay, so y'all know that animation is not cheap.
Yes.
I would assume not.
And movies themselves are not what I would designate as something you can get for just a few bucks.
Right.
Not unless you're buying it at Walmart.
Well, did you know Disney's Tangled is the most expensive animated movie ever made?
What?
Yeah, they broke it down due to how much they were paying the animators and how much the materials and all that cost. It cost $49,059 per second of animation to produce.
Holy what?
Is it because of the hair? It's the hair, isn't it?
It's mostly the hair, yes.
Yeah.
Jeez, crow.
In order to get the smolder just right, I believe that.
Oh, yeah. That's why the wanted posters look so bad.
Well, you got to cut costs somewhere.
Oh, all right. Well, with there being no further business for this part, Kent?
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
By the roll of the dice, my next movie is Thunder Force. Nickname in college. All right. For this month, however, I watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Quick run on this one. If you liked Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves with its style of filmmaking, and you liked the ending fight of Wonder Woman with its not-so-great CGI, then boy, do I have the movie for you. Because King Arthur, Legend of the Sword keeps both of those things. It begins with a gigantic elephant trying to destroy a castle. And when I say gigantic, I mean it is larger than the castle. And so Uther Pendragon, played by Eric Bana, wielding Excalibur, now played by a +3 Sword of Haste, saves the day. And that night, though, the king's brother, played by Jude Law, sacrifices his wife for some kind of power. And that power will be used to kill Uther's wife, then Uther, but Arthur gets Moses'd away and lands in Londinium, where he is adopted by a group of prostitutes. We get a wonderful montage of Arthur growing up and developing his own criminal enterprise. Because that's what you do in Londinium. He is then arrested at one point, where he is brought to the newly discovered Sword in the Stone. All men of a certain age are brought to it because only the true-born son can pull it. And it turns out that Jude Law, who's been king for a while, Uncle King, is a little bit nervous that somebody is going to take the sword, become king, and usurp him before he's completed the MacGuffin project that will let him stay king forever. Arthur pulls the sword, and then he passes out. And then he's almost executed before he's rescued by a mage and Sir Bedivere before being brought to the headquarters of the Resistance. Arthur's criminal upbringing helps him out. They make life difficult for Uncle King for a while. Uncle King, however, is smart, and he sets a trap that at first is unsuccessful, but because it's a movie that requires drama, the brashness of one of the Resistance members causes the whole thing to fall apart, and the Resistance is almost destroyed. Arthur, at first despondent, tries to throw the sword away, but the Lady of the Lake returns it and gives him a vision of the future if he doesn't accept his role. It's almost a non-issue, because like the whole scene is like 5 minutes long. It's like, I don't want to do this anymore. Well, this is what's going to happen. Okay, I'll do the thing. And so Arthur accepts his role as leader. He defeats Uncle King in a terrible CGI fight that's so muddy and full of jump cuts that it's easier to follow the final fight of the original Transformers live-action movie than this fight, which is between two characters. The bad guys lose, the round table's made, everyone except Uncle King and his family live happily ever after. It's acted well. Well, it's acted as well as Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. The focus is so much more on style than substance, but as long as it's got style, we mostly overlook the lack of substance. Charlie Hunnam, as Arthur, exudes masculinity. There is no romantic subplot of this movie, because if there were, that would be the plot of the movie. There would be no way to focus on anything else. Straight up. Also, straight up, the CGI at the end of this movie is bad. Not just kind of bad, it's really bad. It's good through most of the beginning and the middle. Enough so that you don't even realize that there's CGI happening until you remember, oh yeah, there's no way, real way that we can tame and have like 6 foot tall giant hawks that act on cue. Right. And that it's good. You just forget that it's CGI. But at the end, when everything's fast paced, you can tell that it's CGI. And being able to tell means that it's bad.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. There's nothing really shockingly new about the story. And there's this distinct feeling throughout that it's meant to be part of a longer series. Like, somebody told Guy Ritchie, it's like, hey, we're going to make like 6 of these, so just set things up real well. it's not going to get another five movies. It's probably not even going to get a sequel. But if you like pretty distractions and the sexiest Arthur since Sean Connery in First Night,
yes,
then this is a perfectly reasonable movie to watch. I'm giving it a B like me because I was entertained despite myself. So go for it. And now it is time. The final Crystal Steamer of the year. There can be only one. And though I really want to give it to Zoot Suit, which was my least favorite movie of the year, this year's Crystal Steamer for the movie segment is being given to Army of the Dead. A movie that had every opportunity to be really fun and funny, but instead did nothing but set up conflicting rules, ridiculous set pieces that had no meaning to the story, and used such blatant emotional manipulation that there was no impact when characters died. Instead, the movie did everything it could to set up a sequel, which it's getting, and a prequel, because there is no justice in the world. So in a year that included a Julia Child biopic, an Eddie Murphy comedy in which Eddie Murphy is not allowed to talk, a Will Ferrell movie about the Eurovision Song Contest, and a movie about a French volleyball team that is hunted by crazy hillbillies, Army of the Dead is the winner of the movie segment's Crystal Steamer.
Wow.
Gentlemen, I turn over to you the nominees for the Golden Justin.
Darren?
The movies. Would you like me to give you the full list of movies from this
year?
Yes,
please.
Run through the list, please, for the viewing audience. Yeah.
The full list of movies this year is Arrival, Apostle, Julie and Julia, Eurovision Song Contest, Fire Saga, 1,000 Words, Little Evil, Army of the Dead, Extinction, Zoot Suit, Girls with Balls, Mindhorn, and King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
Darren, what do you got?
Well, full disclosure, Chad, very rarely will I hear you do a review during this segment and think to myself, I want to watch that. it's not anything against you. It's all the movies. They don't sound like my kind of thing most of the time. But there was one. Well, actually, there were two. That the small rabbit part of my brain was like, yeah, let's give that one a try. And those were Girls with Balls and Eurovision Song Contest. And I don't know why, because Girls with Balls certainly didn't sound like a good movie. But at the end of the day, I'm giving the Golden Justin nomination to Eurovision Song Contest Fire Saga, because from what I remember of the review, it was just stupid enough to make me want to laugh at it in person.
You see, I was going to nominate Army of the Dead because of your review.
Well,
not because the movie's good, but because of your review of it.
Well,
and so now I'm conflicted.
Well, you know, the movie could get the golden, or can get the Crystal Steamer, and the review get the Golden Justin.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what it was, but it's just silly to me that it wins both.
It's our show. We can do what we want.
That's true. I either want to recommend Army of the Dead or Eurovision Song Contest Fire Saga, because both of those were fantastic. So, Darren, what do you want to do?
Well, I mean, it's Chad's segment. He can be the tiebreaker. We've got two votes for Eurovision, we got one vote for Army of the Dead, and we got a half vote for Girls with Balls.
A half vote.
I am.
Yeah.
Okay, so I am going to award the winner on it, and here's why. I'm going to give the winner here to Army of the Dead.
All right.
Because it's the review that I contacted my military buddy.
Yes, that's right.
And we talked about how many mistakes were made in the opening 5 minutes of the movie and how much joy it brought me to watch somebody who had not seen it just get absurdly upset by how it was done.
So there you go, folks. The best and worst of this year's movie segment is Army of the Dead.
How do you
figure
like
that one out?
So
Snyder finally gets a trophy.
All righty.
We're just going to mash them together where it's a golden me taking a dump.
All righty. So there being no further business, a final thank you to everyone who helped us out with our Extra Life marathon. We raised a little over $3,000. Thank you, thank you, thank you. For what's going forward, check out our other features. You Want Me to Watch What? Retromantics, Geek Cave Plays, and starting in January, the Week 3 podcast. Tell your friends about us and how they can find us just about everywhere now, including on Good Pods. We're recording on the sixth day of Hanukkah, so retroactively, Happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas coming up, Happy New Year beyond that, and every other holiday in between, including Christmas Movie Marathon Day on December 23rd. From the Geek Cave family to you and yours, happy holidays. Thank you so much for letting us into your ear holes and supporting us while we share our geeky selves. And so for Kent Harris, whose voice lends us authority, for Darren Wright, whose voice lends us credibility, for Justin White, whose voice lends us comedy, I'm Chad Savage, and my voice is here too. Thanks for listening, and remember that everyone is a geek for something.